James Kennedy Ministries presents Truths That Transform.
Today on Truths That Transform, it's Sanctity of Human Life Sunday.
It is indeed a crime that kills not only the baby, but the consciences of all involved.
With the death toll from abortion in the millions, what can we do to restore the God-given right to life to unborn children?
Nothing is more important than the revolution that's gone on in the judiciary for the pro-life cause.
We'll show you the current landscape of the pro-life movement, and there's much to be encouraged about on today's Truths That Transform. Welcome to Truths That Transform, a production of D. James Kennedy Ministries, where we are standing for truth and defending your freedom. On this Sanctity of Human Life Sunday, we mark the upcoming 48th anniversary of the tragic Roe v. Wade Supreme Court decision that has led to the deaths of 60 million preborn American children. On today's program, Dr. Kennedy will deliver some powerful words about the ruling and its impact. But while there has been far too much innocent blood spilled and there is much to be done, there is great reason to be encouraged by the effect pro-life efforts are having. Marjorie Dannenfelser is one of the most stalwart pro-life activists in America and the president of the Susan B. Anthony List, which seeks to advance pro-life leaders in public office. She recently sat down with our own John Rabe to discuss the current state of the pro-life movement.
Marjorie, tell me about the Susan B. Anthony List. I think many people know about it, but this is one of the most powerful and important pro-life organizations that we have in America. How did you come to begin the Susan B. Anthony List?
Well, simply put, it's the political muscle of the pro-life movement. So we're all about elections, electing the president, electing the Senate, electing the House, electing governors that will pass laws that save lives. Originally, we were only, when it was in my living room and just a bunch of us women kind of trying to figure things out, we were only about electing pro-life women to public office. And we still are about that. We still make it an important priority. But now, in terms of the overall strategy of the movement, the political piece of it especially, that's our day-to-day work.
How would you describe the past 4 years for the pro-life movement? To be honest, I was one who was skeptical when Donald Trump was running for president. You know, we've seen that so many times where suddenly someone has a late in life pro-life conversion, just as coincidentally they're getting ready to run for president in the Republican Party. So I'm not sure I believed him on it. After 4 years, it's really been quite a 4 years for pro-lifers, hasn't it?
Oh, wow. It's been an escalating moment for the movement. I really think the space of those 4 years has been the distance between being kind of the stepchild of the Republican Party to being a central driving force of the Republican Party, who our candidates are, what our agenda is on the federal level and on the state level. I was with you. I was deeply skeptical during the primary. I opposed him, my organization opposed him in Iowa and South Carolina, those two early primaries that are really pivotal for primary elections in the Republican Party. And we said then, he's our last choice. In fact, anybody but him would be better. And boy, was I wrong. And now I'm a mother of five, and so I've been taught that being wrong happens quite a lot, pretty much every day, right? But I've never been wrong and so happy at the same time. And the way we dealt with that situation when he was very clearly going to be the nominee is we did what I try to do in life generally, which is treat people the way they say they want to be rather than what you suspect they might be. And so we went to him, Kellyanne Conway and I are great friends, and she had been very recently brought on board, and she helped us talk with him about a series of commitments. We drafted a letter. He signed his name to those commitments. And that in politics is gold. We have something to align his actions against his commitments on paper. After that, we use those commitments as the central organizing principle of all of our Get Out the Vote activities and all the battleground states. So then later, when he was even before he was being sworn in, he was bringing on staff that would implement those very commitments. So early on, we knew this is going to be better than we worried about, and these 4 years have borne out every day the pro-life commitment that this president has. He's changed everything.
Talk a little bit about the transformation of the federal judiciary and the Supreme Court under the four-year term of Donald Trump.
Nothing is more important than the revolution that's gone on in the judiciary for the pro-life cause. In fact, it's the precondition for any actual change to come about in pro-life law in this country. Since 1973, we've been stymied because of the problem of the judiciary. So his commitment to appoint only pro-life judges was enormous and a watershed for the pro-life movement. No one has appointed more judges than this president.
When you look at the landscape of the judiciary, one of the reasons that it's important is because the pro-life cause has made so many gains on the local level, on the state level, and those can't get anywhere if you immediately go to federal court and some judge strikes it down. I think, you know, it's never, we're not asking for, judicial supremacy where judges make laws that we like. We're asking judges to stay out of the way and let the people make the laws. The people have been making increasing pro-life laws, haven't they?
That's right. Yes, we've seen record numbers of very bold pieces of legislation passing all over the country. But as you say, there's a backstop, and the backstop is Roe versus Wade. Roe versus Wade is judicial supremacy. Roe versus Wade said, you may have a lot of differing opinions out there from state to state about what the abortion law should be, but we don't care. We're gonna big step over you and make sure that your voice does not make its way into the law in your state. And on something that is such a deeply held moral conviction, what an outrage that this has reigned supreme over this country since 1973, when it's about the death of little boys and girls every single day, not losing sight of that. That there's nothing more oppressive since the founding of our country. Maybe a handful of other human rights causes we can align ourselves with and understand how oppressive the judiciary can be in preventing us from fixing this. So yes, if we erode or overturn Roe versus Wade, which I think is not far away, we will begin to see the will of the people, state by state, making its way into the law, and we'll save hundreds of thousands of lives initially every single year. That spiritual, moral, physical change, I don't even think we can put our mind around yet, but it is all good because each one of them was created by God for purposes that only these little ones could fulfill. It's mind-boggling and beautiful.
I think it's important for people to understand that, too, because there's certain jadedness that happens. And I've heard many Christians say, and even pastors say, look, the political stuff doesn't work. We've been, hammering away at Roe v. Wade for 47 years. It's still there, still, hundreds of thousands, maybe a million babies a year die. It doesn't do any good. Of course, we all want Roe v. Wade to be overturned, but that ignores a lot of progress that results in real human boys and girls being born into the world, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that cynicism, that pessimism, that can't, that has been going on for 47 years has been, I think, more burdensome, more harmful than what we get from the other side, from NARAL and now in Planned Parenthood. They don't see this as the birth of a little boy or a little girl created by God, sent here for a specific purpose. They don't think that, but we do. So if we do think that, how do you act? You act as if each one of them is exactly what we say they are, and we work until we can't work anymore. Christians are people that we labor in the trenches no matter what. We don't say, hey, there's really no chance to stop this great human evil in our time, so we're just going to hang it up and go play pool tonight. We don't give up. We see the example of Christ walking to the cross, everything that fighting something important really looks like. It doesn't look like glory all the time. It looks nasty and muddy, and there'll be conflict, but there's always the reward at the end that we know, and it's not in this world. It's in the next. So with that type of conviction, which people who don't believe don't have, right? They don't have that, I'm not going to get all the goodies in this world. They're actually way better later. We wouldn't have seen the abolition movement with the strength that it had. We would not have seen the suffrage movement with the strength that it had. The movement to stop child labor in the early 1900s. All of these great human evils were led by people with great Christian conviction. And we have the blessing in this country of we have the tools of democracy that the founders gave us to pick those tools up and get to work fixing what ails us.
You had an organization named after Susan B. Anthony. There are many who say, well, Christianity is oppressive to women. You know, they make fun of Mike Pence, and Amy Coney Barrett, The Handmaid's Tale, and so forth. It's an oppressive movement. As a woman heading a pro-life organization, an organization that is in part dedicated to getting pro-life women elected, is Christianity anti-woman? Is Christianity oppressive to women?
Well, the truth sets you free, man or woman. And the truth sets us free in unique and complementary ways, men and women. I've found in my own life, in a life of constant conversion, but definitely a conversion to really believing that that God is real in my day-to-day life. I used to be very pro-choice, and I thought that abortion was the great liberator. And boy, was I wrong. So enormously wrong. And I wouldn't have known that. I do not believe I would have ever come to change my position if it hadn't been for the truths of the gospel.
Well, Marjorie, we sit in a much different position than we did just a couple of decades ago in the pro-life movement. You and, of course, the Susan B. Anthony list are a major part of that. Thank you for all the work you've done. Thank you for being with us.
No, it's a privilege to be with you and work with all those groups. Thanks for having me.
It has been said that the sanctity of life is like the big E on the eye chart. Those who can't see that life is sacred can't clearly see or understand any other moral issue facing mankind.
The sanctity of life is not just some odd little view off on the side that we can ignore. It is the foundation of Western civilization.
In the powerful booklet, Life, an Inalienable Right, co-authors Dr. D. James Kennedy and Dr. Jerry Newcomb look at some of the most compelling issues surrounding the sanctity of human life. For your generous donation toward the work of this ministry, we'll send you the booklet, Life, an Inalienable Right, to help you clearly articulate and defend the sanctity of human life as the foundation for not only a Christian worldview, but for civilization itself.
Marjorie Dannenfelser has been the president of the Susan B. Anthony List for 27 years. And as you've just seen, she is greatly encouraged about the future of the pro-life movement. And you should be too. Millions of lives have been saved because of the effort of dedicated pro-life Christians. It's a movement made necessary by the enormity of the Roe v. Wade Supreme Court decision back in 1973. Perhaps the best name for it is the one Dr. D. James Kennedy uses in this message, the American Holocaust.
January 22nd marks the anniversary of the controversial and infamous Roe v. Wade decision, which opened the door to what has been termed the American Holocaust. On Memorial Day, we remember the thousands of men and women who fought and gave their lives for our country. It is fitting, I believe, on this anniversary of Roe v. Wade, known as Sanctity of Life Sunday, that we consider the tens of millions of babies who never had a chance to give their lives for anything, who never saw the light of day. Let us consider for a few moments the real nature of what all of this means. What lies behind Roe v. Wade, this decision which has so changed our nation? Mother Teresa said that in abortion, It not only kills the unborn, but it kills the consciences of all that are involved. What is the real theological, philosophical basis for all of this? Did you know that Roe v. Wade had religious roots to it? Many people don't know that. And strangely, the courts have struck down laws because they had religious overtones, because they had been influenced by religion. And that is very interesting when we consider that even this case had some religious roots to it as well. In fact, Justice Harry Blackmun, who was the one who wrote the Roe v. Wade decision, said that if there was any religion to which he would refer for guidance in this matter, it would be paganism. Ancient paganism, with its little concern for the sanctity of life, where babies were not only aborted in the womb, but if they lived to be born and were unwanted, they were left out on the sides of mountains or in the forest to be devoured by animals or picked up by strange-looking people who had some weird designs for them. Paganism lying behind the abortion holocaust of our day. This indeed is a tragic thing for us to consider. We're told that it's ushering in a new ethic, that the sanctity of life ethic must be replaced with a quality of life ethic. Millions of people hear those terms bandied about, and they really don't perceive what is involved in them at all. But let me tell you, my friends, I would like for you to look through that window, and you will see a whole world opening before you when you understand what that means. And let me quote to you a profound statement made by Malcolm Muggeridge, the brilliant author from England. He says this: the sanctity of life is, of course, a religious or transcendental concept and has no meaning otherwise. If there is no God, life cannot have sanctity. By the same token, the quality of life ethic is an earthly or worldly concept and can only be expressed legalistically and in materialistic terms. The soul does not come into it. Did you grasp that? It is only with a theistic, with a godly, with a spiritual view of life that you can have a sanctity of life ethic, because only God grants sanctity or sanctifies. But if that view is replaced with a quality of life ethic, it is being replaced with a paganistic or materialistic or atheistic ethic. You see, we can talk about the quality of a material thing or baby, but you cannot talk about the quality of his soul as being greater or less than the quality of the soul of another baby. That is transcendental. It is spiritual. And so, in going from the sanctity of life to the quality of life, we've gone from a theistic to an atheistic, from a spiritual to a materialistic view, from a Christian to a pagan view of life. And we've done it without most Americans ever even knowing it has happened. There are other roots and analogies that are involved in this. In addition to paganism, there are close analogies with Nazism. And I would like for us to note those at this time. And you remember in the Nuremberg trials, the Nazis were condemned for killing people in their gas chambers, for aborting children in their camps, their concentration camps, and killing them. and all of the atrocities they did. Consider that. That what the whole world condemned as atrocious and crimes against humanity has now become an act of compassion, which is absolutely astonishing when you think about it. In fact, I don't know if you knew this or not, but the institution that was in charge of all of the concentration camps of Germany had a very interesting title. It was called the Charitable Foundation for Institutional Care. I remember one time saying to somebody that had lived in Germany during the Nazi atrocities, I said, how did the German people allow these things to go on? How could that have happened? I wonder if some of our grandchildren aren't going to say, when Roe v. Wade is overturned and goes the way of the Dred Scott decision, as I'm sure that it will, they're going to say, Granddaddy, what were you doing during the time of the American Holocaust? What did you do to stop it? And I would ask you that question right now.
Abortion remains the great stain on the fabric of America. The hardening that has come upon us as a result of consigning tens of millions of children to the garbage heap is profound. And it's evident all around us in everything from mass shootings to confusion about categories as basic as male and female. A recapturing of the sanctity of human life as created in the image of God is not optional for our continuing as a nation. It's absolutely essential. That's why Dr. D. James Kennedy and Dr. Jerry Newcomb wrote the short book, Life, an Inalienable Right, Biblical Reasons for Protecting the Sanctity of Life. And we would like to send it to you as our thanks for your generous donation to the ongoing work of this ministry. Simply write to us at D. James Kennedy Ministries, Box 11154, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33339. Or call toll-free, 877-962-7677. Or go online to djkm.org. America's founders believed that life was an inalienable right. But the Supreme Court unilaterally changed that in 1973, and today's left works feverishly to separate us from our founding even further at the cost of tens of millions of lives. But in this powerful little book, Drs. Kennedy and Newcomb address what the Bible says about life in contrast to the materialistic pagan view of life that too often prevails today. And they examine issues like abortion, assisted suicide, and stem cell research. They also explore lessons we should learn from Nazi Germany. And if you're able to give a generous donation of $40 or more, we will send you the short book, Life, an Inalienable Right, plus the brand new DVD, Celebrate Life, Pro-Life Champions Speak Out. This special DVD program features the full version of the interview with Marjorie Dannenfelser of the Susan B. Anthony List, whom you heard from earlier in this program. You will also meet an abortion survivor, as well as someone who was conceived in rape and thankfully was allowed to live, now as a powerful voice for Jesus Christ and for life. Celebrate Life contains compelling and encouraging pro-life stories and a documentary exposé on Planned Parenthood's racist roots, which you must see in an era where Planned Parenthood kills more black lives than any single entity in history. We will send you the short book, Life, an Inalienable Right, by D. James Kennedy and Jerry Newcomb, as our thanks for your generous and much-needed donation. And we will also include the exclusive new DVD program, Celebrate Life, Pro-Life Champions Speak Out, as our thanks for your much appreciated gift of $40 or more. Simply write to us at D. James Kennedy Ministries, Box 11154, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33339. Or call toll-free, 877-962-7677. Or go online to djkm.org. This month, a new Congress convened in Washington, D.C. After a bitter 2020 election battle, it could be easy to lose sight of how much we have to be thankful about. And in the House of Representatives, the pro-life party actually gained ground. Among the gains were 13 new pro-life women who were elected to Congress, in addition to the 11 incumbent pro-life women who were already serving there. Seven of them flipped seats that were last held by pro-abortionists. This is one of the more encouraging and I think underreported developments of recent months. Sometimes it's easy to become discouraged in the fight for life. It's been going on for so long. Abortions, nearly a million every year, are still taking place. But over just the past year, we have seen numerous states adopt pro-life abortion restrictions. Conservatives who believe in the Constitution and don't read a leftist agenda into it, as the Roe v. Wade ruling did, now control the U.S. Supreme Court and fill the federal courts. A generation of Christians who grew up hearing pro-life arguments are now taking those arguments into the halls of power. And the abortion rate fell steadily throughout the past decade, reaching historic lows and representing hundreds of thousands of lives saved. So take heart, my friend. Your efforts have not been in vain. Lives are being saved. As the Apostle Paul tells us, let us not grow weary of doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not give up. D. James Kennedy Ministries is standing for truth and defending your freedom. I'm Frank Wright. Thank you for being with us. And here's a look at the next truths that transform.
My biological father is a rapist. I don't even know my ethnicity. But I am still a human being, and I still have value. And my life isn't worth less than yours just because of the way I was conceived.
Down through the centuries, churches have been the ones who have moved to get rid of most of the great evils of our world.
That's next week. Today's program is available on DVD for your gift to this ministry of any amount. Please call, write, or log on to our website today. This has been a production of D. James Kennedy Ministries.